welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
Scotty Hertz, or as I seem to be known by somebody out there, Mr. Political. So,
Mr. Political?
Yeah, I don't know if that's a good or a bad... I suppose it's okay, but... Call me Mr. Political. That's my superhero name,
worst,
I guess.
Worst things you can be called.
Yes, I have been too.
Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show. You can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Just go to cfru.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen. And you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast from Podbean on the Guelph Politicast channel. Today we will be heading out to Fort McMurray, where the fire now seems to be under control, but the politics will rage on. From the demands of reconstruction to the debate over whether or not climate change shares the blame for the inferno, we will tackle this hot topic.
Not to be insensitive.
Then the U.S. presidential race. Trump is the presumptive nominee. Speaking of sensitive. But that was the easy part. Now everyone wants to know how the grand old party will come together on the Trump plane and sing Kumbaya, but can they? And then finally, we'll talk about the sputtering transit system here in the city of Guelph. Riders are suffering from peak service cuts and everyone's blaming each other. And speaking of blame, we'll talk about that bit of discord that was on display at council on Thursday night, or on Monday night, I should say, because tonight's Thursday night. But first, the Panama Papers were released, and by released, we mean everyone can now access them online. They've been all arranged in a searchable database, so you can, you know, look up and see if your neighbor has an offshore company that was arranged for him by... Mesac Fonseca. And there are a lot of more politicians revealed on the list. Canadians are now on the list, thanks to the new release, and people are now asking again, and they think they know the answer, whether or not we have two systems of taxation, not just in this country but in different places around the world, one for the super rich and one for everyone else.
Yeah, you're nobody unless you're on the list, right? Get on the list! I did a bit of poking around. I'm sure you did too, Adam, but it was more along the lines of just, hey, what if I... It was kind of like when I first got the internet, what do? You Google your own name.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that Adam and I are anything to do with Hertz International Corporation or Donaldson Finance out of Switzerland. But there was one local address. There was an address in Rockwood, which I thought was very interesting. It was just a P.O. box. I'm not even sure where the P.O. boxes were. But, of course, what do? You put in Guelph. And then there's this other alternate, not universe, but you know there's a bit of shadiness going on, let's say. Alleged shadiness, we'll call it, because I was putting in just ridiculous things like Born Identity was on. So I put in Treadstone, and there's a company called Treadstone. Well, I thought, okay, what would be a good fake company name from the movies? Torchwood. Torchwood is also on the list. And then it turns out that Emma Watson is on the list, but it wasn't Hermione Incorporated. It was just,
no.
Are we total nerds or what? But anyway, so you put things in off the top of your head, and that's what comes up. Now, in her case, she said, or her people said, it was to protect her anonymity and safety. And off the top as well, we need to mention, there is nothing illegal in this country about having an offshore bank account.
No.
Zero.
No.
What is illegal is doing the dodge and dumping a bunch of cash that should have been taxed into your offshore account. And that is what needs to be sorted out. And will they sort it out? I don't know. The biggest name that everyone knows on the list is RBC, who have set up, it seems, allegedly, 370 entities. And it sounds like they're going to turn the info over to the CRA and those that are looking for it. Who they will in turn do some further prodding and see if indeed any rules have been bent or broken.
Yeah, RBC and 241 other people were what you call intermediaries, and in other words, people who helped other people get their offshore accounts going. And the whole Emma Watson thing sort of blew it up because, you know, it's like not Hermione, but.
She's got a lot of money, right? She's a very wealthy woman, right?
The three of them probably have a lot of money, but the and Daniel Radcliffe has that Farting Corpse movie coming up, but
right.
So he's going to be making serious bank from that. I don't know.
Absolutely.
But the excuse about protecting her privacy, it's like, well, is there a corporation, like a sector that manages privacy any more incredulously than banks? It's like, why are you having to create offshore entities to protect your anonymity? That's what banks are for. But you're right. Nothing is illegal in doing this, and there are legitimate reasons to do this.
Absolutely. But the hit list is very interesting in terms of those that are on it.
Yeah.
And there was an attempt off the top to draw links. I think we spoke about this before with Vladimir Putin.
Yeah.
Because one of his best buddies is on it. There seems to be a lot of people on it that are like one step removed from somebody that you would think was on the list, like the son of so-and-so, Putin's friend, or Al-Assad's cousins are on there as well. It's and lots of sons and daughters of people, although Petro Poroshenko of the Ukraine was on there with his candy company or some sort of interest.
Yeah.
And the weirdest one I thought that was the diggers are finding was the son of the man who killed Emmett Till. Now, Emmett, there was a famous case that was at the kickoff of the civil rights movement in the U.S., and these people were found not guilty. But then about a year later, when the statute of limitations ran out, they said, yeah, we killed them. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There's all sorts of across the spectrum people on the list. Now, of course, the burning, it is just a list. I mean, you can put random things in it and get names out. We can do it. Anybody can do it. But it's the problem with it, I see, is that it needs to be curated somehow. You know, you've just got this dump of information and anybody can look and you can see there's somebody in Rockwood's got an account.
Well, that's what the consortium was doing to begin with.
Yes.
And everyone was like, no, dump all the information so we can see it. Like, let us see it. Give it to us. And I agree with the curatorial function, because look what happened with the Ashley Madison thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, there were some legit people on there, like Josh Duggar.
Eve Adams.
You know.
Right.
Eve Adams was on there. Yeah, so there were a lot of people who were, you know, went home one night and their significant other was like, you're on the Ashley Madison hack list. And you're like, what the?
No, I'm not.
It's like, no, I'm happy with you and I wouldn't be surfing. And yeah, so it's... There is something wise to your point about curation. On the other hand, you know, we're getting some pretty big names dropped too. And, you know, Martin Turnbull, the Prime Minister of Australia, was on there because he was on a board that set up an offshore account in the 90s. I mean, it was before he was Prime Minister, but still, it does speak to... It wasn't when he was a kid. It wasn't like he printed... spray-painted Albardo on the side of the opera house or something. And he was on that with Neville Wren, who's the premier of New South Wales. So you have two high-powered people in Australian governance connected to this company that was doing some stuff offshore. And, you know, it seems to be making people in that general part of the world crazy, because John Key, who is the PM of New Zealand, got up in Parliament and said, well, it's not just us on there. You can find Greenpeace and Amnesty International and the Red Cross. And it turns out he was wrong about all three. And he ended up being thrown out of Parliament for being out of order.
Yeah.
And
I'm just saying stuff. Yeah.
Clearly following the Trump example.
Oh, yeah.
But that's for later. So it's... I mean, it's turning some... Putting a light on some pretty... important places that, you know, these people in powerful positions of influence are well versed in the, shall we say, art of hiding your deal.
The procedural, yeah. It's like they know exactly, or at least knew exactly how to do it, but now the dump or dumps, because what was the other one that was, what they call it, the Swiss, I want to say the Swiss dump.
That's so
terrible
bad.
Way of putting it. It wasn't the dump, it was the download.
Well, it was a data dump.
Data dump. So there was a few different ones, smaller, of course. This one being the most massive. And what was the range was 70, started the early 70s?
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, too, like the naming of the names, the Kubrick family. There's like a Hollywood element to it. We talked about Emma Watson, too, Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
Now, whether they're from the – oh, it's the leaks. I'm saying the dump. Offshore leaks, Lux leaks, Swiss leaks.
Mm-hmm.
Just things leaking out everywhere. But also, you know, you've got the Jackie Chans of the world, and then you've got the mob. You know, you need to find it's the mob that And I'm generalizing when I say the mob. It's a blanket term for, to me, anybody who's sort of laundering the, you know, money laundering is part of the business, right?
Yeah.
And that, in my book, would include certain levels of government as well with mobster type activity, right? I think that's what they're trying to pin on Putin, right? They're trying to say that Putin is this unsavory character. Here are all these people that he knows, and his daughter, and his cello playing buddy, or that whatever his name was. His name escapes me completely. His close friend. But lots of people have close friends that do bad things and aren't necessarily involved.
Well, yeah, when you get to a certain level of influence, making friends with or becoming acquainted with unsavory people is inevitable.
But and it's easy to draw those connections, too, because something that I noticed in terms of titles on the list, the number one with Canada in it, if you just put in Canada, you don't just get the country, you get all these accounts that have Canada as a name, which maybe lends some street cred to whatever fake company you've established, right? Because a lot, they're just fake. That's what the company specialized in, Fonseca, just setting up fake names. And most of them are linked to Hong Kong. So whether they're just using Canada as a catchy name or there is an actual link. Now, there are lots of links to Canada. I think the most were in Toronto. Vancouver, Montreal were obviously the main ones.
Well, where the money is.
The money, London was number one, I think, with a bullet in terms of there was like thousands of companies. But part of my digging too was, and it wasn't really digging, it was just sort of poking around, was that there was an address in Montreal that kept coming up, 1800 McGill Avenue, McGill College, right? So I thought that's interesting because that's a fairly big, if you know Montreal, a fairly big street. So I Google mapped it and looked at the names of the companies, and any I picked the name of any company that I didn't know. Redborn, you know, it's like Torchwood, Treadstone, Redborn Securities.
What about Vandala Industries?
Vandala Industries. what was another one? Blue Bridge Management was another one. And then I took those names from Google Maps and put them in the database, and guess what? They're in the data dump. They're in the leaks. And that was fairly easy for me to do. It didn't take that long, but there's this, you know, it's very easy to make the links between these companies, or I put companies in quotes too, because is it like one of those ones where you go and the office is empty and there's an old dot matrix printer there, or there is, in lots of cases, there's no office, right? It's a PO box. It's just a mailing address. I wouldn't say I'm surprised there aren't more from Guelph, but it's, you know, you think maybe one or two more, but no, there isn't. So,
well, I mean,
we're off the radar.
Yeah, there's more than enough to go around.
Definitely.
The numbers, 1,352 corporate officers were named from Canada. 912 offshore entities were named. 242 intermediaries, like I said. 1,312 addresses linked to Canada, and they think that Canada's been shorted $100 billion plus in terms of these tax havens set up. And that's on top of the $270 billion that is the government is, identifies officially as taxes unpaid over the years. So, I mean, it's like 50, almost, not actually not 50% more, but like 27, 30% on top of what they think is already owed, which is not small potatoes.
No. So of course they're going to go after them by any means necessary. And that the thing with it too was that lawyer in Alberta who was named as well, and he was also an actor, right?
Mm-hmm.
He started set up financial companies, and he said, "Well, you've obtained this illegally, and so anything that's in there has no, you know, bearing." But that's not true, obviously. And that's, I think they have to tread carefully in terms of using the information that they get from this to go after certain people, because it is the kind of thing that could go to court and they could say, well, you mean you did obtain that information sort of illegally, right? But and that, of course, is one of those gray area things that we have in the modern information age. Is that information privileged, or is it okay that it's out there? And do they have to find John Doe, who contacted the paper, the South German Times or whatever it was, and said, "Hey, I'm John Doe. You want some data?"
I don't know what the legality is, but I mean, it wouldn't be the first time information I think the rule is, if the police had gotten John Doe to steal the files, that would be illegal. But if John Doe just walks up and says, "Here are some files," that is not considered illegally seized.
Well, so. Then we have Ramon Fonseca, who is, as in Fonseca, coming out and saying everything is false and inaccurate that's in there. So, you sure about that, Ramon?
all what? All, what are
214,000 companies. Yep, it's all inaccurate. Yeah. It's not.
Well, I was going to look at the actual, the actual data numbers. It's like 2.7 terabytes of data.
Yeah. Incorrect. All of it lies.
Yeah.
I guess that's him covering. It's well, he's a lawyer, right? So he knows how to do the cover, duck and cover. Be lots of people ducking and covering on this one for a long time to come, I think.
Unfortunately, before we move on, maybe it was because of the news cycle and the more pressing matter in Alberta. It didn't seem to get the play as much as it did on the nightly news as the last round did, which disappoints me to a degree.
Panama Papers?
Yeah.
It was the last thing on the news the day it was released, at least on the CBC. So.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah, on the mainstream, yeah. So
that's why we put it up front.
Yes. That's our job.
Yeah.
It's what we do.
Exactly. Also, what we do is talk about the fire in Fort McMurray. Because, we mentioned this kind of briefly last week because it was kind of happening. The evacuation was happening. At the same time, as people were sort of literally running for their lives, and that's very important, and people are left with nothing, and there was the heartfelt story of the man who helped the waitress who was a single mother get home to get her kids out of the way, and by the time he got to his house, everything was gone, and so there's a lot of heartfelt stories like that, but on the other hand, I think there is issues that need to be addressed, in particular to comments made about whether or not climate change played a part. Not that climate change was the cause, because we can get into the science speak of it, but Elizabeth May was one of the first people who came out, Green Party leader Elizabeth May was the first people who came out and said, we have to look at this being a climate change disaster as being associated with climate change, if not directly caused by climate change. And everyone, of course, in these disaster situations, were like, hold your jets. Let's not blame and should this situation. But, now that it's kind of under control, let's blame and should the situation.
Yeah. there is a time and place to make those comments. When all hell is breaking loose is not the time. And, I'm one of the people – I don't think Elizabeth May is too far off from what she said. And of course, in terms of political points or a battle or whatever, Trudeau went for the jugular and said, now is not, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was something to the effect of that, now is not the time to make that point. But there were people who were doing this kind of, you see, look what happened. And again, it's not the time to do it. But measured response coming from scientists who were asked, University of Alberta, meteorologist Claire Martin was one of them. Other people involved in science said, and they didn't out and out say it is climate change is causing this. Climate change is a probable cause and definitely a factor. And it's anybody who lives there, I would say even people in Fort McMurray, what happened? No snowpack.
No.
Right? There's no moisture. Unseasonably warm, warmth that they have never seen that time of year.
It was 30 degrees.
I was in Calgary for a wedding on the May 24 quite a few years ago.
The Victoria Day long weekend.
And it snowed.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of place where it's not super warm necessarily this time of year. You got 30 degrees. It's hot. It's dry. Questions about forest practices and, are they managing the boreal forest? Because boreal forests catch fire.
Oh, yeah.
That's how they reproduce, right? That's part of the science behind it. Actual science, they're supposed to catch fire. But, if you're managing forests so there's never, ever a fire, you get canopy density and things like that you don't normally get. So not to go on and on about the science of it. Scientifically, fact, climate change is a fact. Is it the factor as to why this happened? Or was it some dumbass with a cigarette? We don't know, right?
Well, it can be both.
It is in all likelihood both. It's multiple causes. But to point to this specific area, Fort McMurray, and say, it's oil, it's the oil that's done it. It's regardless of who's there, there's a city in the way. All 88,000 people, whoever were evacuated, and all the animals, whatever, they're not involved in the oil production necessarily. It's kind of like blaming the people in that Doctors Without Borders hospital was bombed for the bomb. I was like, wow, you know, you're in a war zone, so you got bombed. Like, it's the jump in logic is a bit ridiculous, but it's never too soon to talk about climate change. But there is a way to do it, right?
Well, there was the people who were like, oh, karma. It's karma. I'm not seeing one Prius and all these images of people fleeing. And it's just like, really? It's like, I don't like the oil patch either. And yes, I know it creates jobs, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I will never get out of my head this documentary I saw called Petropolis. It was at Toronto International Film Festival about 5 years ago. But it was all aerial shots of the oil patch.
Mm-hmm. Is that Bertinsky? No,
he did
photos of it, but
yeah, that yeah. was you're probably thinking of manufactured landscapes.
No, but Bertinsky did, I think, a photo. Oh, montage I'm sure he did. Of the yeah, but this that's
was
what he does. But.
This was all aerial film of the oil patch, and it was like 80 minutes long, and there's no narration or anything, and it's just like it's gross and disgusting, and I wish we weren't doing it. But this was a huge fire. This was a fire that took out a city of 80,000 people in like a day. Like people like had to throw whatever they could carry into their cars and take off. Like as the flames, like watching the flames come toward them. They're talking about the fire jumping rivers at certain points. And yeah, it's scary. And the point I didn't want to lose was, like, yeah, Elizabeth May was probably a little quick on the stick, but I always find it problematic in these situations when people go, well, we have to wait to discuss the causes and the where's and why's of this, because it happens in the United States all the time with the shootings, when the mass shootings. A mass shooting will happen, and some people will say, okay, like, can we talk about gun control? And then politicians will come out and say, well, this isn't the time talking about gun control. And by the time everyone's quote-unquote ready to talk about it, the moment's passed and everyone's moved on to the next disaster. And I feel like I don't want to lose that thread here. I won't say that Fort McMurray had karmic... reaped karmic... curse from what happened, but I will say it's highly symbolic.
Yeah, I mean the karmic argument, and it was a Tom Moffat, who's Town of Tabor. I think he got suspended from his job of course they made a point of saying, well, he was an NDP candidate. It wouldn't matter what he was a candidate
no.
for. It was a dumb thing to say, because excellent post by Jen Gerson in the National Post talking about this whole concept of karma, and it's a religious concept, but people just sort of throw it out there like, oh, it's karma.
Yeah.
But there is a lot deeper to it. Her comment was that the only thing that's constant in the universe is that no one ever gets what they deserve. I mean, did anybody in Fort McMurray deserve this?
No.
So it's like... It's not even remotely close to karma.
You do have the flip side, though. You have like Laurie Goldstein in the Toronto Sun going, it's idiotic on so many levels. It's hard to know where to begin. And he's talking about people trying to associate this with climate change, or suggesting that there is a climate change angle here. And he goes on about pointing out how, you know, the Earth has only gone up 1 degree in 100 years. It's like, we can go up to 15 without, like, doing too much damage. I'm like, first of all, where did you get that number?
Yeah, the sky? Known scientist Laurie Goldstein will
yeah.
talk
then
about it.
Yeah, and second of all, do you realize the significance of the Earth warming 1 whole degree? The entire planet Earth warming 1 whole degree in 100 years. So, you know, it's coming from both sides. The people who don't want to talk about it at all, and the people who want to talk about it a bit too much and want to draw lines where there perhaps aren't any lines. But it's getting worse. The 10 million acres were burned in California and Alaska last year. Fire seasons are getting longer, and that's globally.
And starting earlier.
And starting earlier. There's a 3-to-5-fold increase by the end of the they say there will be a 3-to-5-fold increase by the end of this century relative to the end of the last century. So yeah, there's a lot of changes coming. Really scary changes.
Yeah.
And we have to be able to talk about it, and the scientists who were like, well, no, we can't draw a straight line, and this is kind of where scientific language And the preciseness of it doesn't meet the, shall we say, volume of the average internet commentator. But scientists are saying we can't draw a line from climate change to the fire. Is there like perhaps a relationship? Yes. You could say that the Earth is getting warmer, getting drier, less moisture, caused by global climate change, which makes the conditions for a fire easier to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't draw the line from climate change to the Fort McMurray fire. And then you have the people commenting, well, there you go. Climate change didn't cause this.
And like,
that's
real.
Not what they're saying at all. They're saying it's not from point A to point B. It's from point A, B, C equals D, which could lead to E.
Yeah, I mean, and it's all about stewardship too, right? It is us, regardless of whether it's climate change, which I believe is a factor. It has to be. Mm-hmm. It absolutely has to be when you look at historical levels, what scientists are saying, but also something that was mentioned, that a lot of the dwellings in Fort McMurray were built quickly and cheaply for the oil industry. One of the hardest hit areas was a trailer park, and a trailer park is temporary accommodation. And as you, it's, I wouldn't say a running joke in the States, but I mean, what always gets hit first in America when there's a tornado?
Right.
It's a trailer park, because it's in a place where it's, you know, it's not the settled part, and you know, it's a transient kind of area, and a lot of people left that. Was their home? It's no less a home to live in a trailer than it is to live in a brick house or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have this sort of temporary accommodation that was in a place where it isn't normally, and then there's a big fire. There's been fires in Fort McMurray before, but its scale, magnitude, all of those things, and a lot of it does come down to stewardship and our relationship with the land. You know, it's entirely possible that the fire was started by lightning, but there's no moisture. There was no rain, plus heat, plus, you know, forestry management, lots and lots of factors, of which climate change is definitely a factor.
And we're seeing it here.
I'll draw the line.
Yeah, we're seeing it here. Like here in Guelph, it's not as obvious as a huge raging fire that's forcing everyone to leave. Although I think if that were to happen somewhere like Guelph, that would be a much bigger mess. But I remember walking home from work Sunday night wearing my winter coat. And today, everyone's in like shorts and t-shirts. And I'm just wearing I'm wearing my grunge gear. I'm wearing like this shirt over my t-shirt.
The Cobain special.
Yeah, I'm doing the Cobain. And I walked up to campus from my Starbucks bureau down at the bottom of Gordon Street. And I was hot. And this is and you know, so 4 days ago I was wearing my winter coat going home, and today I'm hot, just wearing, you know, light shirt, long sleeves, walking up a hill.
And the weekend's going to be cooler.
Yeah,
I mean, everybody's saying the weekend's going to be crappy, but that's not it. The weekend's going to be as it should be in May.
Yeah.
So yeah, things are definitely happening. And the problem is, it's a bit amorphous. You know, it's like, well, it could be this, it could be that, but if everybody's seeing it more and more, and there's a pattern, like mm-hmm. like that, all that snow that we had, ha-ha, like, where did it go? Well, it's an El Nino year, and it's this, and it's that.
And fires are worse in an El Nino year.
Yes. So it all adds up to disaster. We wish all the people in Fort McMurray the best, obviously. Sounds like they're getting some help. There was lineups for those cash cards. Help from the Red Cross and others. And the amazing story, like you were saying, of those people, they're just, you know, get on the bike, let's get the heck out of here, forget the helmets. That woman that stayed up for days making sandwiches for these guys, like that. Those are the stories. There's this rumor and reputation of Alberta being this sort of place like y'all pew-pew cowboy types, but absolutely not true. Big hearts there too. And the amazing part is the only fatality was a car accident.
Yeah.
That they know of. Yeah. I mean, they still have to pick through the ashes and whatnot. But that just shows it when it comes down to something like this. And I bet you people are going to go back there, and the homes will not be looted. They'll be untouched. Everything will be as they left it. That's pretty amazing.
Hmm.
So I'm trying to be a bit of a bright sider at the bottom of the hour here, because in the midst of all that disaster, there is hope always.
And another bright side, City of Guelph donated $5,000.
Did not know that.
And yeah, that was one of the last items at City Council before things got interesting, which is what we call in the business a tease.
Ooh.
Coming up on the show after we play some music and PSAs, you're listening to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
You're listening to CFRU 93.3 Campus Radio.
From the exclusive original television soundtrack album, that was Holy Flypaper from the show Batman. I assume you recognized Burt Ward at the beginning there. Burt Ward? Adam West? Burt Ward. Burt Ward.
Burt Ward.
That is probably the debut of that CD on this station. I don't know how long it's been here. I think it's been here since they didn't have CDs in 1966, but that's what it says.
No, they wouldn't have.
We were playing it on old wax acetate. Anyway, Holy Flypaper. Because nothing sticks to certain people.
Yeah, let's start this segment by reading something just posted to Facebook a little while ago. To all my friends on Facebook, just a short note to you on our pus-headed president. And president is in quote marks. This character who I refer to as a zero, and they put the actual number zero in parentheses in case you didn't get it, should have been taken out by our military and shot as an enemy agent in his first term. Instead, he remains in office doing everything he can to gut the America we all know and love, ! Now comes Donald J. Trump to put an end to the corruption in government. The so-called elite, who are nothing but common dog turds from your front lawn, are shaking in their boots because there is a new sheriff coming to town and the end to their corruption of the American people, you, is at hand. Guess who said that?
I don't know, but it's a known person, obviously, right?
It's Peter Senegal, Donald Trump's butler.
Wow. Wow. That's just ridiculous. But not surprising.
Well,
butler's a great guy. He takes me everywhere. He's a good guy.
If you can imagine the stuff Trump says in public, can you imagine what Trump says in private?
Yes. Yeah, I can't imagine with a posting like that, if it's reflective of the boss. I wonder if he got a raise for that.
But I feel sorry for Trump. He was having a pretty good news day for a while because he had the big meeting with Paul Ryan, who's the Speaker of the House, if you're not exceptionally knowledgeable about the American political system. Paul Ryan, of course, is the highest office-holding Republican, and he came out earlier this week and said he wasn't sure he was going to endorse Donald Trump, which is kind of a big deal because he's also chairman of the Republican convention, where Trump will presumably receive the nomination in July. So they had a meeting. Everybody said it went well.
Yeah, they're trying to play nice anyway, right?
Yeah,
talking unification of some description.
Yes, positive steps towards unification was what Paul Ryan tweeted.
Just like North and South Korea. Yeah. Sorry, that's probably a bad comparison, but I think those are the extremes that we're seeing in the GOP.
It's hard to know which one would be which in this scenario.
Yeah.
It's...
It's more like East and West Berlin, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, something like that. Although neither of them would want to be associated with commie pinkos or whatever the term is they would use. But yeah, it's...
I'm sure Trump would just make up a term because that's what he seems to do. Everybody has a nickname, so yeah. Everybody on the sun is going to get a nickname. Like Elizabeth Warren is Goofus now. So Elizabeth Warren became the Goofus.
Yeah.
That's presidential talk, isn't it? And I guess Elizabeth Warren...
Well, he is
Warren,
pivoting to the general. Waka, waka, waka.
Yes. I believe she's giving it back as hard as she gets it on Twitter. A little bit of a battle going on. That's the kind of that's the caliber of the stuff we're seeing.
Yeah, it's funny watching it, watching what's happening now, because when we talked about this before, he wasn't the presumptive nominee. There were still some primary votes to go on. Ted Cruz and John Kasich were still in it. They dropped out or suspended their campaigns last week, and even that isn't 100%, because then Ted Cruz did a radio interview, I think, on. It was before the primary on Tuesday. It was on Monday, I guess. And he's like, look, if I win this coming primary, yeah, I'm going to take my campaign off suspension and come back in it. But,
what?
But you know, his talking points were on the matter of if he couldn't. He couldn't see a way to victory, which is why he suspended his campaign. But if he were to win one, if he were to win the next one, he'd come back because
Sanders,
I guess,
style, just keep winning them.
Yeah,
but yeah, the weird thing was that they were still on the ballot because of the period of time in which they withdrew.
Yeah, they can be taken off.
And
the
they
ballot.
Still got Cruz got, I think it was 18.5 in Nebraska, I guess it was. And 9% in West Virginia. Trump, of course, clobbered both of them. But the fact that they're still registering, Kasich 11% in Nebraska, like, that's not insignificant. I mean, that's...
No.
People are going into that knowing that these guys are gone or suspended, as you say, and yet they're still pulling in votes.
Well, that's almost 1 in 3, right?
Yeah.
And if you can't get 1/3 of the party behind you, even though you're the presumptive nominee... I mean, he has lots of time. Mm-hmm. He has at least... 2 months till the convention to sort of pull everyone together. But everyone's still predicting a gong show in Cleveland. But that's going to be a lot from a lot of people who are going there to protest Trump specifically.
It's going to be something going to be like Chicago 68, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, he has the time. And at this point, like, can you really underestimate Trump? Because
that's
all
thing.
The ceilings people have built over him have shattered.
There was one county. It's supposedly one of the poorest counties in America, McDowell. And I believe it's in West Virginia, coal country. Trump got 91.5% support. That is a record. No one has done that ever in any of these. You know, you win these things with, you can win with 40% or whatever percentage. That's like almost every single person in this county saying Trump is our man. It's never happened before. So, yeah, well, you're pulling numbers like that. It's like, you know, he's definitely one to watch. Whether in the bigger scheme of things, I don't know, NPR had a poll saying, or several bits of a poll saying that there's no way Trump will win. I don't know if that's just to make people feel better that they're worried about it. They're calling, and this is way early, because neither one of them is a solid yet. They're calling for a Clinton landslide. I don't know how true that is, because there's lots of states where they're kind of neck and neck. And, of course, it's dependent on the American system, which is kind of strange, the Electoral College as opposed to, you know, the popular vote, as we saw in 2000. I don't know how they can say that outright, but I think maybe it's just to appease people. It's like... Oh my goodness, it's going to be Trump. Because at least with other candidates like McCain and Romney, you kind of knew what you were getting. Right?
Yeah.
But Trump is just so much of a wild card. He's the wildest wild card they've ever seen. If I'm going to be a wild card, I'm going to be the wildest wild card. That's yeah. like Trumpism.
It does sound like something Trump
something
would say.
He would say, but it's true. I'm proud of being a wild card. It's like, good Lord.
I'm going to be the greatest wild card you ever played.
Yes.
No. And they're starting to put out polling for Clinton and Trump head-to-head, and there was the Quinnipa one that I have never heard of, but they did a survey. It's not a poll, it was a survey. They did an online survey for voters from Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Florida, and said that if Trump was neck and neck with Clinton, it was like 40-39%, with about 19% undecided. So it's... I mean,
depends on the poll, yeah.
Well, yeah, and those numbers have been quoted a lot. Well, not the numbers so much, but the polls themselves have been quoted a lot. Like, well, it's kind of a race, and it's like, on the one hand, you're like, I don't want to believe it to be true. But on the other hand, I actually kind of want this to be a race. I want people to think this is a race so nobody gets complacent. No matter who the Democrat nominee is, I mean, it's likely going to be Hillary. Bernie Sanders' campaign put out an email, I think, either yesterday or today, saying, like, we're going to go to the convention, we're going to have a contested convention, and we're going to, you know, because we can't afford to have Hillary Clinton as a nominee because she'll be wiped out. I don't think she'll be wiped out.
No.
Because people seem to like Hillary Clinton once she kind of gets into the job. She always has a hard time fighting for the job, but once she's in the job, people like her. Just like realize they like her again. So I want people to sort of relax about the idea that we're on the brink, we're on the eve of destruction, but on the other hand, I want people to be on their toes that, you know, it's probably not the best thing that Trump gets nuclear launch codes in January.
No, and but if you're looking for love by any chance, I don't know if you heard this story about Maple Match, where they've set up an app, a dating service, where Americans can find Canadians and get connected with them. So when they run away from a Trump presidency, they will have a ready to go partner in Canada. Can make a life here.
That's not a bad idea.
Maple Match. It's, it's a nice name too, but I don't know. it's just one of those, a bit of levity in the whole thing. Because it's weird because, well, not weird, but it's just pure fuel for Saturday Night Live people.
Oh, yeah.
This whole thing. You couldn't think it would get any more strange and weird and crazy. And just one more comment off that I wanted to make, too. The elections in the UK and London has a new mayor, Sadiq Khan, Muslim guy.
Yeah.
And Trump said, well, you know, he'll probably be a good guy. I'm going to lift the Muslim ban for him. And Khan is like, you know what? Like, just don't even bother. Like,
yeah, it's like, I don't want to be your token Muslim.
I won't be coming if that happens. So yeah. That was strange to me. Everything just weird.
Well, then Trump said, well, it's really more of a suggestion than like an outright ban. It's like, really?
Kick them all out, build a wall. But this guy, you know, he's okay.
But yeah, but consider, you know, to come out and then say it's just a suggestion when he's kind of, like, it was a serious policy speech. He had a teleprompter and everything.
Yeah.
He read from a statement. He read from a prepared statement. So, you know, it's a little bit more than a suggestion.
Some scary stuff.
Yeah, it's
should be afraid. A little bit afraid. Not a lot. Wait till November. We'll know by November whether all this...
Speaking of flashbacks, mm-hmm. Dan Quayle was interviewed on CNN today.
Yeah.
And there were a couple of interesting things. First of all, he endorsed Trump.
Oh.
That
shouldn't be
for people, for the young people out there, Dan Quayle was the vice president of George H.W. Bush, George W. Bush's father, Bush 41.
People were terrified Bush was going to die in office because then it would be president.
Well, there was the thing with the Japanese dinner where he, like, fainted.
Yes.
So, I mean, it wasn't that... I mean, he's still around. He's still, like, jumping out of airplanes every birthday. So it's, you know, he's holding up
now,
pretty good.
Right?
Yeah. But the other thing was Dan Quayle came out and said that he would be too liberal for the Republicans now. He wouldn't meet their definition of conservatives, he thought.
Hmm.
And this is the guy
that
who
might actually be true.
It might be true, but, you know, for the young people out there, this was the guy who went on TV about how dare a sitcom character be a single mom. How dare she just, like, flaunt her single motherness.
What show
on
was
television? That was Murphy Brown.
Oh, Murphy Brown, yes.
Yeah.
I was going to say Alf, but...
Alf!
A single space character. I don't know. I don't remember a lot about the 80s.
If Alf got pregnant, TV. Dan Quayle would have, like, took his life, I think. But that's...
yeah. It was the era of the labels on every record, too, so...
I don't think Dan Quayle was involved in that, but
no,
it was...
No, but it was his era.
It was
Tipper Gore, actually.
It was Tipper Gore.
Democrat.
Yeah.
Or at least husband is, so...
Well...
We still see those labels quite often when stuff comes in the station, so... And of course, we play all of them, but no, we can't, because most of them have foul language that the government don't like.
That's why we're playing Batman 66.
Yes, so...
Okay.
When our show moves to midnight, we're just going to say whatever the boop we want, so... Take that, Dan Quayle.
And on that note, there's been some, shall we say, upset. People upset.
Days of Rage.
For a couple of weeks, starting last Monday, a week from this past Monday, the city of Guelph has cut peak service on Guelph Transit. That's the bus is running every 20 minutes between 7 and 10 and 2 and 6 p.m. every day. There's a lot of people upset for this because what happens between 7 and 10 and 2 to 6 every day? People going to work or coming home from work. A lot of mistransfers, a lot of people who are like just showing up late. And there's some confusion out there because for the first couple of days, there were a lot of reports of buses kind of just idling and seemingly kind of purposefully missing the transfer downtown. And that even happened to me on Tuesday. I was on the bus going downtown at 9:30, and it stopped at the West End Rec Center. It was on time, but he stopped at the West End Rec Center and said we were going to miss the transfer downtown because he had to save the mileage because of budget cuts.
That doesn't make any sense.
That's why.
So he stopped at the West End Rec Center, sitting there. The bus is on and idling.
I don't remember if it was idling or I think it was idling.
Turn the bus off because they generally don't turn them off once they're running.
Right.
Because the bus is far more efficient when it's running. So I don't know. Saving mileage is presumably to save energy?
I don't know.
It's the clock on the odometer.
This is the thing is because I actually talked to Phil Meeker at Guelph Transit and said, like, what is the deal with this? And he said, I have no idea what that's about.
And he actually announced that.
He said that to the bus. And it was a full bus,
He said that to the bus.
Yeah.
There's no logic to
that. And everyone was upset because, like, we're going to miss our transfer. And he's like, well, phone your city councilor.
That almost sounds like a mini work to rule in my view.
A couple of people have said they overheard things meant to suggest.
You heard it live, right? I mean, there's no logic to that statement. It doesn't make sense. You're going to stop and I'm going to miss the transfer to save mileage?
Yeah.
The mileage is the same.
Yeah.
The distance is the same.
Right.
Is this kind of like... It was kind of like when I got booted off an airplane and they said, well, traffic is heavy over the Atlantic. It's the same kind of logic. Like, what? Traffic's heavy over the Atlantic? Like, you sure about that? So
I don't know if it was like because he doesn't want to hit the gas. Like when you're running late on the bus, the driver will hit the gas to try and get downtown in time.
But is it because wasn't one of the comments was the savings isn't from having the drivers off, but the quote fuel and maintenance?
Yeah, that's where it's $750K.
So the implication is I'm saving fuel by missing your transfer.
Right.
That's just dumb.
But it's something.
I'm glad I wasn't on the bus.
But it's something.
I have been on the bus, but I've been, detour the Guelph Transit story. That was my bus. We're like, where is this bus going? Okay, it's late. I know there's construction. That's acceptable in some ways because I know there's people upset about that too, and if you're missing your job or your appointments or whatever, that is completely...
And that detour is huge too.
Yeah. It's like Gordon. Do you remember when Gordon was closed for all those months when they replaced the bridge? I mean, that was havoc too. And I guess they do try and do these things when it's not peak. But yeah, it's causing a bit of chaos. So is there any hint that they're going to get this ironed out? Beyond the detours, I mean, this idling business.
I don't know. I haven't heard too many reports of it in the last week. It's just mostly the late stuff. So I don't know if maybe the talk that was going around on social media was like saying, okay, cut it out because it's kind of blowing up. I've been trying to get in touch with Andrew Cleary of the Amalgamated Transit Union Local 1189 to see what he could tell me about it. I haven't heard back from him. But, that kind of stuff seems to have not, and I haven't encountered it since, but.
It just seems like a really weird thing to say.
It was weird.
To announce it rather than just do it.
Well, that's why it kind of sounded like a protest.
Hmm.
Even though nobody's job was cut, which is kind of what you would expect.
And it might have been a bit of a rogue protest. But it would seem like one of the problems, and I think you talked about this on your blog, was that everything has to work on a 30-minute sked, and the routes aren't 30 minutes, are they?
Some of the routes aren't
longer,
shorter,
and with a detour, nothing is going to be on time.
And the detour, one of the things Phil Meeker told me was that there's a detour that transit is specifically using, and there's a detour that people in their cars are supposed to be using.
But if you can find a shorter distance, you will take that, right?
not just that, but I was down at my Starbucks bureau earlier, and
he's going to get a copy out of this eventually.
Fingers crossed.
Starbucks sponsor of the show.
But I was walking across the street to the boathouse, and there were cars driving down Gordon from Wellington, and you can see the construction from Wellington.
Yeah.
You can see the barricades across the road. You can see the dump trucks lined up. But people are turning onto Gordon, driving up, like almost right up to the barricade.
Yeah.
Like, I think we can get – no, we can't get past. No, no. It's okay. I guess we'll do a U-ey.
We'll just cut through bread to table and have a 100-car pile up in beside the liquor store, which is what I saw one. I was like, where the hell are these people going? What are they trying to achieve by doing this, by blocking the plaza?
Yeah.
It's dangerous, among other things, but it's like, God – this isn't like Toronto construction where you're in a car. I'm specifically talking about cars here, not the buses. If you're in a car, is anything really far in Guelph in a car? Really? Even with the detour? I mean, come on.
No.
Buses, whole other world, right? But so from what you're saying, there are no lights on the horizon in terms of Gordon Street, I believe, is going to open soon.
It's only 3 weeks, and it's almost 2 weeks. The 2 weeks are almost
done. So that one will be on. But, of course, then there's the other ones. Like, there's a closure in my neighborhood I didn't even know about. I went barreling up there on my bicycle, and I just went through, and they're all...
Stevenson's closed starting next week, I think.
And that'll be significant, too, because that's kind of an alternate route. Victoria was closed. This is all, presumably, all to do with the pipe, right?
Yeah.
The pipe. I saw the pipe that came out of the ground. People believe me? This pipe needs to be replaced. I took a picture of it all, but I think I'll put it on my blog or something. It was like a historical pipe like they find on, not Antiques Roadshow, with Time Team or something. They're digging a hole. Oh, there's a pipe that the Romans put in. That's what it looked like. So that's why your roads are closed. There is a very good reason for it.
Yeah.
It's just unfortunate that it causes the havoc that it does. And, doubly unfortunate, I think, for transit riders.
We have to talk about the other thing real quick.
Yes.
And the Twitter snafu. And I was, like, right at the tail end of council on Monday night, which was James Gordon's wanting an apology from Dan Gibson, because James Gordon sent out a tweet that said, "I'm looking forward to hearing Mayor Guthrie's vision for the city at State of the Union," or not State of the Union, State of the City. And Dan Gibson thought that was a slight against the mayor, saying, "Well, you're clearly not listening to the speech." And
I was like, "What about this and this?"
And James Gordon was like, "Well, no, I sent this out before the speech. That I was looking forward to it. It wasn't a sarcastic remark." And it all ended up laid bare before council on Monday night. And the irony of the situation is the State of the Union speech had a pretty significant section about, despite the headlines, council is working. And working well.
I believe it was on Guelph Today what I was reading. And I don't know if you were there. You were probably there. But what was
State
this sort
of... City?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there.
What was this hollering at the end, "Okay, everybody into the back room now"? Was he joking around, or was this like...
Oh, at the meeting.
Yeah. It's like, we got to hug this out.
Yeah, everyone... No. What happened was Dan Gibson, in my feeling, kind of gave a backhanded apology.
Yeah.
It was like, "Look, if you didn't get the, if my timing was off, that's fine, but I apologize." So by that point, like, Mayor Guthrie was like, "This is not where I want to go with this," and wanted to wrap it up. And he even threatened to use the gavel. He's never used the gavel, but he threatened to use the gavel. He's like, "Don't let me get out the hammer."
Gavel, yeah.
And so, yeah. So
he did the old, "In my office now, all of you." Is that
well, more
is
or less,
happened?
He brought the meeting to a close. They had to go back into a closed meeting, which that must have been fun.
Mm-hmm.
After that, they had to finish off the closed portion of the meeting. But so he called the meeting to go in camera. They voted on it, and then the councilors kind of went to their corners in two groups.
Weighing in at 170 pounds. Yeah.
So the mayor was like, "Get to the back room now." He wanted to
chop,
get back.
Chop.
Yeah, right.
Right.
So it was...
Not, "I'm going to grease you all out." That was the impression I got from that line, having not been to the meeting.
No, it was kind of... It was kind of a snap. It was like, let's get to this meeting over with. So I think the urgency was like... That was not the direction he wanted to go that night. Because it was a nice, lazy, relaxed planning meeting until then.
So there's still a little bit of that tension in the air. And I think people have to chill out a little bit with Twitter, too. I mean, as off the top, we're talking about Twitter and the U.S. election. And now it's the local Twittering. I think sometimes people take stuff a little bit to heart, and wanting a sort of inquiry as to what, you know, why so-and-so actually said this. Because, I mean, it is fairly clear that there's, you know, philosophical and political differences between these parties. And it's like that is going to come out, whether it's Twitter, Facebook, to your face, whatever. Right. That is definitely going to happen. Right. And I read the tweets, too, and it was kind of like, well, you know, you probably should let it slide. I don't know. Like,
yeah, somebody said to me, somebody posted on my post about it, like, seeing it pop up in the timeline, it's sort of like in the middle of the speech, made you could understand the confusion. And I think confusion turned to hate, disgust a little too quickly, and I think that's where it all went wrong.
Because if you saw some of the stuff we get on Twitter, my goodness, this is not even in the same realm as a lot of the stuff that's on Twitter, because Twitter can be a very dark place.
Oh, most
at the internet as well. So I just hope everybody's able to get along. That's my own personal, having not been to a council meeting in a while, I'm sure you hope the same thing, Adam. But
I hope
but
so.
Of course, it always makes for interesting chat.
It makes for good copy, as they say.
It does.
Anyway.
And we should, after saying that, all counselors welcome. Still working on the...
Yes, we are still working on. We have 2 down, 10 to go.
Working down the list.
Yeah.
You're all welcome.
We're getting there. That's it for this week's edition of Open Sources Guelph. You can stay connected to us all week long at opensourcesguelph.com. Facebook, Open Sources Newswire, Twitter, @OS_Guelph, and look for us on the Guelph Politicast channel on Podbean, where you can download this and all episodes of Open Sources Guelph. You can connect with me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter or guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter. There's the Spanner book as well, but I haven't read anything in a while. I've got a couple things in the pipe, but it's coming.
Mm-hmm, including the pipe.
Yes, the picture of the pipe. I'll put that up tomorrow.
Stay tuned to DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, campus and Guelph campus and community radio. Very important, it's Guelph campus and community radio. Because we'll be back here next week for more here on Open Sources Guelph every Thursday at 5 p.m. Thank you.